This is a very significant project in terms of both our business, but also for our customers and for the state of Alaska.
A new gas storage facility opens on the Kenai. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, retiring Anchorage Superintendent Carol Como reflects on the tough calls she's had to make over the years.
The hardest decision you have to make as a superintendent in Anchorage, Alaska, is whether to have a snow day.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A federal court judge has rejected motions to dismiss charges against three Fairbanks militia members. U.S. District Court Judge Robert Bryan says prosecutors have presented sufficient evidence allowing the case to move forward. Francis Schaefer Cox, Coleman Barney, and Lonnie Vernon are on trial in Anchorage on charges of conspiracy to possess restricted weapons, and conspiracy to murder law enforcement officers. Defense attorney Nelson Traverso argued unsuccessfully today that words uttered by Cox might have been distasteful and provocative, but were not against the law. After Bryan's ruling, Traverso called his first witnesses. Militia member Les Zerbe testified that the group formed to protect families if the country experienced economic failure and civil government broke down, as it had happened in New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. A village public safety officer in Chifornik is accused of sexually abusing a minor multiple times in a four-month period. Police records indicate that at least two of the alleged assaults took place in the Chifornik Public Safety Building. From KYUK in Bethel, Mark Earhart reports.
42-year-old Eddie B. Fenn is accused of sexually abusing a 17-year-old girl several times from November 2011 to March 2012. According to a police affidavit, the unnamed victim contacted the Alaska State Trooper's office in Bethel on May 21st to report the alleged abuse. The next day, troopers traveled to Chifornik to interview the victim, and according to police records, the victim said the first contact came in November 2011 when Fenn called her on her cell phone and asked her to come to the public safety building around midnight. Once in the building, the victim alleges they had sex there. The victim alleges that the abuse occurred again in December 2011 at a Bethel hotel room where Fenn paid for her airfare to and from Bethel. Before becoming a VPSO, Fenn was a tribal police officer and a village police officer in Chifornik for 3.5 years with access to the public safety building. He began training to become a VPSO in Sitka last winter. On March 9th, Fenn graduated from the VPSO program and returned to Chifornik. Upon his return, the victim alleges he again sexually abused her in the public safety building. In March, Fenn spoke to KYUK shortly after his VPSO graduation.
There's only a chosen few that's able to handle this job and do what it takes to uphold the law in the rural Alaska.
Fenn was arrested on May 27th and charged with three felony counts of sexual abuse of a minor in the second degree. He is currently being held at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Center in Bethel. His bail is set at $50,000. Repeated interview requests were made to the Association of Village Council Presidents, the organization that operates the Village Public Safety Officer Program in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, but officials refused to comment on record. AVCP's policy is to not comment on open legal investigations. VPSOs are the only law enforcement responders in most Western Alaska villages and go through a rigorous training and certification process with background checks. In Chifornik, there are two VPSOs. Currently, Fenn's VPSO position remains vacant. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
Utility companies in South Central Alaska will enjoy a little more stability in their supply of natural gas this winter with the opening of a new $160 million storage facility in Kenai. Operated by Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage Alaska, or CINGSA, the new facility is the first of its kind in Alaska and will provide a buffer between the seasons of peak production and peak demand. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has the story.
This is a very significant project in terms of both our business and for delivering gas, but also for our customers and for the state of Alaska.
That was Continental Energy Systems CEO George Schreiber delivering some opening remarks during the commissioning of the new natural gas storage facility in Kenai Thursday morning. This venture will supply natural gas to a number of utility companies throughout South Central, including NSTAR, Homer Electric Association, Chugach Electric Association, and others. Following the ceremony, Senior Project Engineer Ed Scarpace directed tours for the media and others in attendance. Here he explains the basic process by which gas will move into and out of the system.
The gas storage facility takes natural gas from the pipeline system in the summer and injects it into a storage reservoir. From there, the gas goes into the compressor units, and then the gas is flowing across the street into the wells. During the month of October, we'll have a short shutdown, and then when the weather gets cold, then gas will start flowing out of the station and supplement the gas supply for the area.
The whole operation sits on two separate sites, totaling about 16 acres. Across the street from the compressors is the well pad, where gas flows through a 16-inch pipeline into a naturally occurring reservoir under the Kenai River. Here's project manager Rick Gengis.
Well, essentially, we're just filling up the structure once again. It originally contained about 26.5 billion cubic feet of gas. It was a gas-producing field, so it essentially held gas over geologic time, and nothing leaked out. So what we're doing with gas storage is essentially just filling that container back up again.
Singsa has been injecting gas into the reservoir since April, but the process to get the facility built and online started long before that and involved the concerted efforts of a number of groups and organizations with a lot of help from the state legislature. Kenai Senator Tom Wagner was on hand for the commissioning and says providing incentives to the companies involved was key in getting the project online.
The heavy lifting on this in the legislature was done by Mike Hawker from Anchorage. He had a staff and had hired another, more or less kind of a consultant to work on the project and do the bill. And they also at the same time put credits for exploration in Cook Inlet, increased the credits there. All in all, the legislature, this is a very big legislative success.
Kenai City Manager Rick Cook says operations that are industrial in nature and have a minimal impact don't come along too often, and Singsa represents a boon to the local economy in the form of jobs and an expanded tax base.
From a property tax standpoint, it will be in excess of $100,000 a year in property tax to the city. There's not a huge number of people that are involved in the ongoing operations of the facility, but there is, there's ongoing maintenance and other things. So, all of that helps when it comes to jobs that are close to home.
Looking forward, he says the Singsa facility offers some flexibility should a gas line ever be built to serve South Central, as having that storage capacity close to users would allow for construction of an optimally sized line that wouldn't be tasked with carrying peak production flows. Reporting from Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Alaska Supreme Court justices have voted unanimously to select Justice Dana Fabe to serve as Chief Justice starting July 1st. Fabe will follow current Chief Justice Walter Carpinetti, whose three-year term expires on June 30th. Fabe has served as Chief Justice twice before. She is the first woman to have been named to the state Supreme Court. Her duties include serving as administrative head of the state Supreme Court and providing policy direction for all courts statewide. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, using art to reveal the true north in a new exhibit.
A lot of these artists spent months in the Arctic studying the land, the people, the issues in a way that most of us don't get to.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
With the filing period nearly over, more than a third of the legislative seats on this year's ballot remain unchallenged. Candidates have until 5 p.m. Friday to submit their paperwork to the State Division of Elections. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
59 seats, 40 in the House and 19 in the Senate, are up for grabs in the August primary and November general election. It's a larger-than-usual number because reapportionment requires elections in all but one district. But so far, the state elections website shows only 37 races with more than one candidate. The other 22 seats are unchallenged, meaning the person running will almost certainly win. Retired Juneau lawmaker Mike Miller says the small number of candidates is surprising.
Was it that way when you ran for office?
Oh, absolutely not.
Miller served 16 years in the state house during the 1970s and 80s. That means he won 8 elections.
Maybe, politicians just have a bad name these days and people don't want to do it, although I can't imagine that because in Alaska, I've always been proud to serve with members of both parties.
The single-candidate contests are spread throughout the state. 8 of 19 Senate seats are unchallenged, so are 14 of 40 House races. Candidate numbers have grown since earlier this week, when almost half of the races were unchallenged. Most of the open seats are held by incumbents, and many have a strong hold on their districts.
The seats that are pretty safe, people just don't contest them because it costs money. Although not a lot of money in Alaska, compared with a place like California or even a place like Indiana.
Clive Thomas is a retired University of Alaska Southeast political science professor. The author of an Alaska politics and policy book says plenty of earlier elections have seen uncontested races.
I guess it's hard to round up somebody because, campaigning takes a lot of energy out of somebody, and, I guess there's a big deflation when you lose.
Republicans make up the majority of single-candidate races. They have 15 uncontested seats, while Democrats have only 7. Thomas wonders whether people feel much need to challenge incumbents.
Most people in Alaska, I would figure, are fairly satisfied. There's a lot of money around in Alaska. Alaska's in the chips, you might say, and that may affect the way that people feel about challenging or not challenging.
Some of the challenged candidates face no opposition in the August party primaries. They'll face off with another party's nominee in the November general election. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
After nearly 4 decades in the Anchorage School District, Carol Como is retiring. She started her career in the district as a teacher's aide, became a teacher in Anchorage, and eventually superintendent. That's a position she's held for more than a decade. Como says she started teaching in Oregon in 1963, but got pregnant right away, which means she had to quit.
They couldn't teach beyond 3 months. Those were the rules for women. That's so shocking to people today. But anyway, that's the way it was. And so at the end of the school year, I resigned. My husband's family had moved up here in 1958. So we came up because my husband wanted to work with his dad in the grocery business. But I stayed home for 11 years. We had 3 kids and moved to Spokane for 2 years. When he changed jobs, he went to work for Chevron until 1974. And we were transferred to Spokane for 2 years and then back here. So when he came back, I decided I really wanted to get back into education, so got my teaching certificate renewed while I was a noon duty attendant at Ocean View, and then got my teaching job in 1975 and just worked my way up from there.
As an administrator and superintendent of the school district, what were the things that really kept you up at night?
The hardest decision you have to make as a superintendent in Anchorage, Alaska, is whether to have a snow day or an ice day. That sounds silly, but it's not. Because that, and what I found out that made it even scarier when I found this out, that when I make a decision about that, it not only affects our school district, it affects the university, it affects numerous businesses. So trying to make a decision at 4 a.m. in the dark, when you're woken up, And we review all this, sometimes 3 and 4 phone calls later, and check with the military, check with the weather station, check with all the people that have been driving around on the hills all night. Then you have to make a call by 4:30.
Beyond the weather, did the worries change significantly through the years? The things that you were most concerned about with students and education, did those things change?
Well, I think I became much more aware of how devastating ongoing budget cutting is, and that's what we're going through again. The thing that's so frustrating to me, and I obviously haven't been successful getting it changed, is the understanding by our many of our elected officials at all levels that multi-year funding, some certainty going forward, allows us to do real long-range planning. It allows us to hire people, to train them, to invest in them so that they know they're going to be able to be part of the school district. The other thing that keeps me up is that we've got a range of students who, for whatever reason, are not successful, and we're trying to figure it out. We know part of it is getting to school on time every day regularly. That is number one. We can't teach them if they're not there. We've got to help parents understand. No matter what the family circumstances, education has to be a priority for school-age kids.
I can't really imagine someone with your intellect and passion and energy simply retiring, although I'm sure some rest is quite appealing. But really, what will Carol Como be up to in the future?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting because I get that question a lot. I'm blessed with good health and a lot of energy, as is my husband. And we're after the summer, we're going to drive down the Alaska Highway and move to Bellingham, Washington. We're going to take our kids and grandkids to Hawaii for a week and celebrate my retirement in July. And what we're going to do is we'll get settled there, and then one of the things we like to do is take road trips, not long ones, but to be able to drive and really explore the United States and Canada is something we're interested in. And I know that once we settle in and the novelty of all this wears off, that I'm going to find something, but it's not going to be employment. I really know there are plenty of nonprofits. There's plenty of volunteer work that any community needs, and I can think of nothing more fun than to just be Elizabeth's grandmother, if you will, in Bellingham. And if when she goes to school in a year and a half, if I could volunteer at her school to listen to kids read, or if I could go find a Title I school and volunteer one morning a week, I think that would be wonderful. But I have no grand plan other than I'm not going back to work.
Outgoing Anchorage School District Superintendent Carol Como. United Way of Alaska is holding a retirement celebration for Como and a fundraiser for the effort to increase graduation rates in the city to 90% by 2020 tonight at the Nanaina Convention and Civic Center from 6 to 9 p.m.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on Careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Fairbanks area residents are weighing cost and environmental impacts as Golden Valley Electric Association pursues startup of the Healy Clean Coal Plant. GVEA members from Delta Junction to Fairbanks and Healy have seen power rates escalate with the price of oil, the fuel more Healy coal could replace. Area residents staged dueling rallies on the issue in Fairbanks yesterday. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The area around the Northern Alaska Environmental Center was the venue for an unusual mix as pro and anti-coal forces spoke out on the proposed startup of the Healy Clean Coal Plant. Golden Valley Electric organized the rally outside the Northern Center, and the environmental community responded with its own turnout. The Northern Center, the Denali Citizens Council, and Healy, and two national environmental organizations are on record formally opposed to an air quality permit for the Healy Clean Coal Plant. Golden Valley Electric President and CEO Brian Newton laid blame on the environmental groups for holding up a cheaper source of energy.
We want these four environmental groups to drop their challenge to our permit. We want to get Healy Clean Coal running. They stand in the way right now. They're costing us a lot of money.
Golden Valley estimates activation of the facility will lower power rates 10 to 15% for residential customers, a big motivation for GVA rally participants like Audrey Murphy.
I came all the way from Delta Junction. I've spoken for opening this plant for many years, and I think it needs to be done and needed to be done a while ago because of the cost of energy, because of the number of people that can be employed down in Healy, which is good for the state and good for Alaskans all over.
Local green energy entrepreneur Bernie Carl spoke in favor of using the plant to reduce electric rates, even if it falls short of his ideals.
I say build any coal power plant you want, no smokestack. No permits needed. Build any nuclear power plants you want. Can't have any waste. But Healy Clean Coal is built. It is there. It's our power plant. $350 million has been spent. Why don't we lead the parade? Why don't we lead it? I say get it running and get it running quickly.
Carl urged all GVEA members to join the Northern Center and work toward better energy solutions for the future. The utility is already building the state's largest wind farm at Healy and working on a plan to truck natural gas in from the North Slope. Northern Center rallier Doug McIntosh expressed willingness to accept the financial consequences of cleaner energy.
I'd be willing to pay more for electric power from GVEA if it was produced in a less environmentally damaging manner.
Others at the rally pushed for more conservation and efficiency to reduce power demand, and many fell in the compromise camp of people like Paul Tengen.
Clean coal is sort of an oxymoron. I understand the economics of it and realize that we probably have to put up with coal for a while, but it should eventually be phased out because of the it's so dirty.
Golden Valley Electric's board of directors rejected an earlier agreement hammered out with the environmental groups, which would have allowed the air quality permit if the utility agreed to stop burning coal in 20 years. GVEA is currently negotiating directly with the Environmental Protection Agency on the Healy Clean Coal Plant, proposing increased emissions controls in exchange for the air permit. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
It's been 3 years in the making and contains works by more than 40 artists from northern countries. The exhibit True North opened at the Anchorage Museum in May. KSKA's Daisha Eaton takes us inside the show, which attempts to de-romanticize the North.
When you think of Alaskan art, maybe you think of fine art paintings by Sidney Lawrence, Eustace Ziegler, or Fred Makatans. Or maybe traditional Alaska Native totem poles, masks, or baskets come to mind. Now artists in Alaska and throughout the North are creating a different kind of work. And if you want to check it out, your compass will lead you to the third floor of the Anchorage Museum. The artists hail from Iceland, Scandinavia, Canada, Russia, and Alaska, of course. Ryan Romer lives in Anchorage and is originally from Bethel. His photographs depict how modern objects and practices have been incorporated into traditional Alaska Native life. Romer photographed typical village scenes in Bethel in a unique way.
It is a black and white photo image using 120 film. And the reason I used 120 film is because it captures the what I'm looking at and produces it in such a nostalgic way. It gives it that hazy 50-year-old, 100-year-old look.
One photo, Healing the Believers, shows two Native men praying evangelical style for two elders heading to the city for assisted living, Romer.
To me, that captures the essence of living two lifestyles, like what is going on in our culture as spiritual healers and believers colliding with westernized religion. I capture a lot of that because it's the thought process of living two lifestyles like that it really forms a way that our culture is thinking and making decisions.
Another of Romer's photos captures a barber chair sitting at an abandoned fish camp along the Kuskokwim River. He calls it cut and dry.
It's that kind of imagery that is seen all along rural Alaska because, you know, people bring stuff in to make life easier to live, and when it's done being used, they just leave it where it sits.
Another Alaska artist, Michael Conti, who teaches photography at University of Alaska Anchorage, produced videos that explore the absurdity of Alaskan masculinity and machismo against the vast and wild landscape. Conti took videos of himself doing typical Alaskan male activities like hockey and other outdoor pursuits.
I came up here from Pennsylvania about 18 years ago, and I came up for adventure and the Jack London thing and mountains and fish and all this great stuff. My videos sort of became a parody of that and this idea of taking things to the extreme, which me and a lot of my friends did or used to do or still do. You know, skiing off of this or climbing up that.
In one video, Conti lifts up a large ball of ice in a bleak winter landscape, carrying it off screen, only to then have it reemerge exactly where it was.
There's like a performance that happens where I attempt to juggle and balance and do different kind of circus tricks that all fail. and then walk away at the end in frustration. So there's this defeat that consistently happens in this video most of the time, but he keeps trying.
He loops the video in such a way that the figure comes in and does the exact same thing again and again. Curator Julie Decker put together the True North exhibit. The show, she explains, turns the romantic view of the North on its head and makes our region the center of the globe.
We're ground zero for things like climate change, resource development, and now I think there's an understanding that the North is a critical place in determining all kinds of issues of sustainability and the environment.
The artists dissect critical issues through depictions of environmental, psychological, and societal changes the region faces today. One of the most striking pieces in the show is from Canadian artist Anna Rawakowitz. Her giant cloud made of ripstop material is suspended from the ceiling to the right of the entryway to the gallery. It's a take on our natural world becoming more and more artificial. A photograph by Sarah Ann Johnson, also Canadian, is thought-provoking and disturbing. Her image of the Arctic Circle tundra is altered with photo spotting and acrylic inks to include a giant black monolith, exploring the potential impact of humans on the environment as they populate more and more remote places. Of the artists, Decker says,
they're very unique observers and researchers of what's now and what the real issues are. So a lot of these artists spent months in the Arctic studying the land, the people, the issues in a way that most of us don't get to.
And through their eyes, she believes, we can glimpse the North in brand new ways. The contemporary works in the show look beyond the traditional and the veneer of beauty and grandeur that are often associated with Northern art. Instead, the artists look deeper at our evolving relationship to Northern places, not only as explorers and colonizers, but as a part of them. You can see True North for yourself through September 9th at the Anchorage Museum. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
There will be a special grand opening reception for the True North exhibit tomorrow from 6 to 9 as part of Anchorage First Friday events. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mark Earhart and Sophie Eben in Bethel, Shaylin Cochran in Soldotna, Ellen Lockyer and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted. Make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.